Well, good afternoon to you. 407 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Coming up, bottom of this hour, that would be 4:30. Congressman Andy Harris joins us. The lone Republican congressman from Maryland. Democrats in the state legislature looking to banish him. Not through, like, normal electoral means. No, no, no. They want to redraw the line so Andy Harris doesn't have a job anymore. How nice of them. That's what they're doing this week. Andy Harris will react coming up at 4:30. Then at 5 o'clock, Curtis Houck is here from Newsbusters. We'll talk about the infamous Cuomo brothers and their fall from grace. The drama continues. You can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. We were talking about China in the last hour. Let's move over to a different country now, Iran. Did you know that the Biden administration has been waiving sanctions on Iran and not telling anyone? Waiving American sanctions on Iran and not telling anybody about it. And to the extent that they tell anybody about it, they take forever and then they eventually burp out a notice to Congress. Why are they being so deceptive? What's going on here? Adam Credo is over at the Washington Free Beacon. He's been reporting on this very phenomenon. He joins us on the phone now. Adam, good afternoon to you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Just set this up for us. So the Biden administration has been waiving sanctions on Iran and then doesn't tell us about it? What's going on?
Yeah, well, they've been doing this in various fashions really since taking office. First, it was removing the terror designation from the Houthi rebels in Yemen, which are armed and funded and take their orders from the Iranian regime. And there have been other sets of sanctions, like sanctions on doing business with Assad that affect the Iranian regime's business dealings with that very regime that were waived. And now we see, just before these nuclear talks started again last week, the Biden administration quietly waived sanctions on electricity sales to Iraq. This enables the Iranian regime to continue making money by selling energy and fuel to the Iraqis. So again, it's another gift to the Iranian regime. Instead of cutting off their revenue streams, we're actually enabling them to make money.
Wait, what is the evidence that these preemptive, like, giveaways do anything for these negotiations? So I'm remembering earlier this year, he did the same thing. That is, Joe Biden did the same thing with Russia. He granted approval for Nord Stream 2. He bypasses Ukraine. And so by the time he walks into a meeting with Vladimir Putin, he's, by the way, set to have another meeting with Putin. The two of them talk, and Russia's basically laughing in his face. Like, Russia's on the verge now of invading Ukraine. They've got hundreds of thousands of troops on the border, and we're giving them away all sorts of goodies for nothing. So we're doing it again with Iran?
Yeah, look, I mean, that essentially seems to be the case, and this is also something that the Obama administration did, right? Goodwill gestures to the Iranian regime, but in the original nuclear deal in 2015, it didn't get them much. In fact, Iran dug its heels in, and we ended up agreeing not to oversee their ballistic missile program and other things like that. They got passes on the nuclear front. Now the Biden administration comes in, and the State Department does very, very similar things, sending goodwill gestures, waiving sanctions. And what we've seen from the Iranians in just the past week is proposals that even the U.S. can't consent to. I believe the E3, the Western powers also helping to negotiate this deal, said that Iran's proposals are not very serious, meaning that they're asking for everything under the sun and choosing not to concede on any front. So it doesn't seem that these kinds of gestures actually work for the Iranian regime. In fact, it makes them dig their heels in.
Now, the headlines, Adam Credo, seem to suggest that Iran is just laughing in Joe Biden's face. Reuters, Iran walks back prior nuclear concessions, according to a U.S. official. Iran walking back any compromises it made in previous talks on reviving the 2015 nuclear deal, pocketed all compromises made by others, that would include the sanctions that were just waived, and asked for more during indirect U.S.-Iranian talks this week, according to a senior State Department official telling Reuters this on Saturday. So, Adam, it's like this, all of this, you know, these contortions and the giveaways and the rolling over for Iran is doing nothing. They're just laughing in our faces and demanding more.
Well, it never does, and this is one of the things about dealing with a hardline regime, a regime that wants to kill Jews everywhere they live and chant death to America, that it's not like dealing with a rational country, right? Our weakness is seen very specifically by them as an entree to demand more and more and more and really get what they want in these negotiations, which is the full removal of sanctions, including sanctions on its nuclear program. And Iran has already been blowing past those sanctions anyway. They're enriching uranium to levels needed for an atomic weapon. They're committing to enrich uranium even more. And they're saying in talks that this is not something they're willing to concede ground in. So the question really becomes, what type of deal is the Biden administration after? Is it just to say, hey, we reached a deal with Iran, we got back in the deal after Trump walked out, again, this hubris towards Trump, or are they actually trying to achieve something that promotes world security?
Meanwhile, this weekend, there was an explosion near an Iranian nuclear site. The Israelis are being a little coy about what they know about it. The deputy defense minister, Alon Shuster, said on Sunday he can't say what actually hit this nuclear site. He said, quote, "We don't ask a man what he did at night, but we are currently trying to bring about a change in the motivations of the whole world through diplomatic means." What do you make of this mysterious explosion in Iran?
Yeah, look, the Israelis have never made much of a secret about them trying to sabotage Iran's nuclear program, even since Netanyahu left office and a slightly more dovish prime minister took office. They, one, criticized the Biden administration's moves to negotiate with Tehran, saying don't give in to the regime's nuclear extortion, which is essentially what Iran is doing during these talks. And the Israelis have been pretty public about saying that, look, their only choice here, because they live in the region, is active deterrence, and that means military strikes. They've done it in places like Syria. They've done it in places like Lebanon along the northern border where the Iranian-armed Hezbollah operates. And I see this as very much keeping to that pattern that if the U.S. and other world powers are going to sit in Vienna and cave to Iran, the Israelis are not going to sit idly by.
Is there any way, Adam Credo, for us to have a sense of how quickly that the Iranians could have a deliverable nuclear weapon?
Look, this has always been a matter of will and not technological know-how. They have the technology to do this. They have advanced nuclear centrifuges. Essentially, all you have to do is spin that uranium quicker, and you enrich uranium quicker. The 20% threshold, this is a little bit technical, but the 20% threshold, which is about where Iran is at, it's really just a stone's throw away to 99% purity. And I know that sounds like a lot, but in terms of the technology, it's really not. They have the ability to enrich that uranium. It's just a matter of flipping the switch and deciding.
And even during the supposed Iran deal that was meant to constrict them from this development, the Israelis had figured out, well, they were still moving. First of all, they were still enriching uranium in violation of the rules, and they were working on advancing their ballistic missile delivery systems, so therefore they can put those components together and actually deliver a nuke to whatever target they'd like.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And it's not just medium-range ballistic missiles. It's also long-range ballistic missiles, which is a concern for Europe, or at least should be a concern for Europe, though it doesn't seem to be because the ballistic missiles aren't even on the table in these talks right now. It's really just sanctions relief. But yeah, this was a fatal flaw of the original deal in and of itself, that it never really stopped Iran from making the moves necessary to build a nuclear weapon. They just moved that program into an underground bunker that's dug inside of a mountain and, you know, hid their activity and performed it there.
What is all of this? What's the message that the rest of the world is getting from this? It's not just Iran, but China and Russia. What is the message that they derive from Joe Biden having, you know, very obviously a very poor mental capacity, but additionally, and more importantly for foreign policy, the spine of a sea slug?
Yeah, well, look, diplomacy with rogue regimes, I think, is always a bit of a diplomatic tightrope, because on one hand you want to be seen as tough, but on the other hand maybe you're actually looking for a real deal. The problem with the Biden administration approach is that it's unclear what they're actually looking for, except to say that, hey, we just got back into a deal with Iran. The message that sends to other rogue regimes is that we can actually pressure the U.S. into giving us what we want in negotiations. And that's what you've seen with the Chinese, with the Russians, and other rogue regimes.
Right. So why wouldn't, like, Kim Jong-un be taking advantage of this? Clearly, or, you know, just, it's just like these regimes who want to take advantage of the United States, you rattle the saber enough, we're going to start cutting you checks.
Yeah, that's right. And look, the message is not lost on these other regimes. The Iranians have only grown closer to Russia, to North Korea, to China. So this axis is really building up as the Biden administration tries to figure out what they actually want out of these talks. And the question for them is it worth it?
Yeah. By the way, I got to direct people to your website, the Washington Free Beacon, freebeacon.com. Yeah. These guys are just like, I've been great for years, but I just, for whatever reason, especially this last week, I've been reading all your stuff, and it's just wonderful. It's just awesome. And
thank
obviously,
you.
Not just the Iranian coverage, but I see today that the editors of your site collectively have written this piece that I mentioned in the last hour, Biden to Uyghurs, drop dead. And it really gets to the fraudulence of this idea that, oh, we're going to have a diplomatic standoff here. We're not going to send our diplomats to the Olympics. Meanwhile, John Kerry and company are trying to, you know, still use slave labor to develop solar panels, Adam Credo.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. I mean, between Kerry's investments in Chinese companies and his role as climate czar trying to ink this deal with the CCP, we've seen a couple effects of that. And one of them that's really been underreported is the fact that the administration and its allies in Congress, Democrats, are refusing to allow a vote on the Uyghur Slave Labor Prevention Act. That is a bill that would sanction China for its genocide and for using Uyghur slave labor. The White House, the State Department, and Democrats in Congress are saying, let's not do that, lest it interfere with our efforts to get this climate accord. And that's just another byproduct of really giving these types of rogue regimes what they want.
It's awful. Adam Credo from the great Washington Free Beacon. It's really nice to chat with you today. Thanks so much for giving us a sense of all these stories. Thank you, Adam. Oh, man, so much to get to today. Chris Cuomo fired by CNN on Saturday. It wasn't Friday. It wasn't the Friday news dump. It was the Saturday news dump. They booted Chris Cuomo this weekend. Remember Brian Stelter was telling us that he'll probably be back in a couple of weeks? Remember that? It was last week when he was suspended from the network. Stelter was like, yeah, he'll be back in a few weeks. What? And I guess at that point it was believable. You're like, okay, I guess that seems about as likely as anything. Like, they'll just wait until the outrage dies down and pretend like no one else notices, and then they'll bring him back. But the media reporter, Stelter, completely wrong. Wasn't true at all. They fired him on Saturday. So, you know, it's a weird thing. You know, CNN has fired its top-rated anchor. Take that for what it's worth. The other shows had 11 viewers. He had 12. And so he was kind of in charge. And they announced Saturday he's been terminated from the network for his involvement in covering up his brother's sexual assault case. Chris Cuomo was suspended earlier this week pending further evaluation of new information that came to light about his involvement with his brother's defense. We retained a respected law firm to conduct the review and have terminated him, they said, effective immediately. While in the process of that review, additional information has come to light. Despite the termination, we will investigate as appropriate. Oh, they're going to keep that investigation going. They're going to keep investigating this guy, even though they already fired him. Why? What's the point? Like, and then you're going to give us updates on your former employee? Cable news is the best, by the way. They always pretend that they're going to, like, have something else going forward into the future with this person, whether it's an investigation or the guy that they just let go who was, like, a kind of an audience favorite. Hey, I really like that guy. What are you going to do with him? Oh, don't worry. They'll be doing specials for us. They'll be doing hour-long specials every weekend going forward, and then you never see them again. And then nobody ever revisits the statement. Like, hey, didn't you promise us some specials with this guy? Yeah, no. Cable, not a very honest business, cable news. Chris Cuomo, livid after shock firing by CNN, says the Daily Beast. He is livid that he was terminated. He's in talks with lawyers, they say, according to the Daily Beast. He's chatting with his lawyers here. Quote, this is not how I want my time at CNN to end, but I've already told you why and how I helped my brother, he said in a statement immediately after he was canned. The top-rated anchor's termination, top-rated being on CNN specifically. Don't get it twisted. The top-rated anchor's termination came as a surprise to many. The network had announced his suspension just 4 days earlier on Tuesday, and by Saturday, the investigation had uncovered additional information, and the Cuomo primetime host was swiftly kicked to the curb. Not immediately clear what new information prompted the decision, but the New York Times reports this. CNN was made aware earlier this week of a sexual misconduct allegation against Chris Cuomo. Chris Cuomo has his own sexual misconduct allegation, said to be, quote, unrelated to the Governor Andrew Cuomo matter. The allegation reportedly came from a former junior colleague at a different network. Wait a second. So CNN said that they were going to launch an investigation into the details of what Letitia James, the New York State Attorney General, revealed about Chris Cuomo's involvement with helping his brother. And suddenly they happened across news that Chris Cuomo had sexually harassed some other lady at some other network? What does that have to do with his brother? What does that have to do with Letitia James? What does that have to do with the Attorney General of New York? CNN actually has investigative capabilities? They can get to the bottom of stories? Yeah, apparently. They're saying it's not clear what new information prompted CNN's decision to fire him. But they did say the New York Times reports that, yes, there was another sexual misconduct allegation against Chris Cuomo. A spokesman for Cuomo denied the allegation and questioned whether the claim is what led to his unwarranted termination. But CNN claimed, yep, there were new allegations that we got, so we canned them. Now, here's some updates for you on the Chris Cuomo saga, because everything drama follows this guy everywhere. You've got Deadline Hollywood reporting today that Chris Cuomo has ended his radio show. Did you know Chris Cuomo had a radio show? His radio show's over, too. They claim he's ended it on his own terms. I'm going to reserve judgment on whether or not he really ended this thing, or maybe it was just too much. Maybe they reached a breaking point and they're like, dude, if CNN won't touch you, why would we keep having you on as a show? Chris Cuomo done with his radio show. Also, the New York Post reports that he's suing CNN. He's prepping to sue CNN over his reported $6 million a year contract. Wow, must be nice. $500,000 a viewer? That's an incredible salary. 429. Well, good afternoon to you. It's 435 WMAL where Washington comes to talk. Coming up 5 o'clock, Curtis Houck joins us from Newsbusters. He'll break down the collapse of Cuomo's. Cuomo's everywhere going down. Do you see the Washington Free Beacon? Excuse me, the Babylon Bee. The Babylon Bee headline on this today. Unemployment rate among Cuomo brothers rises to 100%. Curtis Houck will have that details. In Maryland, big debate today, beginning today in Annapolis, over how to redraw the congressional map in Maryland following the decennial census. Every 10 years, we do a census, and then we draw the districts so that their populations are evenly apportioned in order to make sure that everyone's equally represented. But, you know, Maryland is one of the single biggest disasters in district lines in the country. No district in Maryland makes sense. You want a headache? Go look at a map of the congressional districts in Maryland. They're so jacked up that places like the Washington Post have said before that the Democrats completely distorted the lines to their benefit. In fact, here's a Washington Post piece from not that long ago about how the Maryland redistricting a plan right now is advancing maps that would eliminate the Republican Congressman Andy Harris in Maryland's first congressional district. And they wrote this in the piece, quote, a decade ago, Maryland Democrats faced criticism and legal complaints over nakedly partisan gerrymandering to give them a 7-to-1 advantage over Republicans, resulting in the state's eye-straining congressional map. And they're likely to face scrutiny from anti-gerrymandering groups again. Okay, so it's so bad that the Washington Post has noticed it. Now, has Congressman Andy Harris noticed it? Well, he joins us now. He's on the phone. Congressman, nice to talk to you.
Good to be with you, Vince.
What does it feel like to have this sword hanging over your neck right now, that Annapolis Democrats could basically eliminate your district on a whim?
Well, they could, but I think they're going to pass a map where it doesn't eliminate the possibility of me winning, where it actually gives me a slight advantage. Because I think after Virginia and New Jersey, I think they got scared that if they got too greedy, you know, they'd produce a map where in a good Republican year we might win two or maybe even three districts. So I think they're just going to, take their 7-to-1 advantage. I think the map they're going to pass tonight and final passage tomorrow is going to be a 7-1 map, which then the governor will take to court because this map looks better than the last map in terms of gerrymandering, but it's still a very gerrymandered map.
So, in other words, things have improved. Your odds have improved based on the map you expect them to pass tonight?
No. My district will be worse than it is now, but better than the worst district that they had. They proposed four different districts.
Yes.
In the worst district, it would be very difficult to win for a Republican, but there were three districts that where the Democrats had less than an 8-point advantage. And, of course, as you know, given what happened in Virginia and New Jersey, a Democrat would sweat with a less than 8-point advantage.
It is pretty wild to see. I mean, it's gotten so bad that places like Princeton have scored the Democrats' gerrymandering maps for this year. They've given them an F rating. The Princeton Gerrymandering Project was looking at what the Democrats in the state legislature have put together and said that this is completely unfair. Do you expect if they vote for one of these unfair maps, and if they especially if they override the veto of the governor to make sure that an unfair map is the congressional map going forward, will the Justice Department get involved, do you think?
No, the federal, the Supreme Court has already said the federal courts are not going to get involved unless, you know, there's a Voting Rights Act issue. We're not a Voting Rights Act state. But the state Supreme Court, we call it the Court of Appeals, I think will get involved. The governor has appointed 5 of the 7 justices to the state's Court of Appeals, which is our highest court. And I think they will get involved because I think you can make a constitutional question that a gerrymandered map. And again, these maps are still highly gerrymandered, not as bad as it was last time because you couldn't get any worse than last time. But these highly gerrymandered maps, we think, violates the Maryland Constitution.
Yeah, I mean, the maps that are drawn, both the existing map and the proposed maps, Congressman Andy Harris, they don't have any unifying principle between each of the districts. It's like the people who are in the cities in Maryland who are connected in the same districts, like, let's say, the 4th Congressional District, it seems like they have nothing to do with each other. It's just drawn in such a way to give Democrats power.
That's right. There was one unifying principle. It's make the Republican district weaker.
Yes.
So every single 7 of the 8 incumbents are literally in their districts. I'll bet you can't guess which incumbent was drawn out of their district.
I would think it might be you. It'd be Congressman Andy Harris.
It would be me. So they had a unifying principle, keep all the 7 Democrat incumbents in their district and try to draw a weak Republican district. And again, the governor will take it to court. We'll see. You know, in Pennsylvania, their state Supreme Court overturned a gerrymandered map.
Yeah.
I think that could happen in Maryland. And if it does, we would get 2 and possibly even 3 seats.
By the way, I just want to point something out here. As we're talking about this, there are Democrats at the national level who constantly pretend like Republicans are the ones who are gerrymandering states into situations where they unfairly represent the people within their states. Is there any state that's quite as mangled as Maryland is? And it's obviously built that way to try and advantage Democrats, Congressman.
Well, the last gerrymander, Maryland was the worst gerrymander in the state. Like I say, this is a little better. So this is kind of on par with what some of the more partisan legislatures do. But again, you know, the federal government's not going to be involved. So it's up to individuals in each state to bring these maps to the courts, the Supreme Court. And you know, most Americans believe that you actually should have fairly compact districts, you know, with like interests. So in Maryland, you know, they drew a map in Maryland that connected the Susquehanna River to Montgomery County near D.C. Now, that is not a district that shares common interests. So again, you look at this map and you say there's obviously one purpose for this map.
Yes.
Is to elect 7 Democrats dependably to probably elect an 8th Republican, but in a good Democrat year, it might go 8-0. And, you know, to draw the Republican out of his district. I mean, that's their principles. And again, you're right. For the National Democrats to somehow feign that, you know, all partisan redistricting is really bad and the Republicans are the ones that do it, I suggest they just look at the Maryland map.
Yes. In fact, I've seen one of the justifications for mangling the Maryland map to the advantage of Democrats is like, well, all these Republicans control all these other states. So if they're going to be unfair, we have to be unfair, too.
Yeah. And you know, again, Maryland frequently prides itself on being, you know, at the forefront of I'll say advanced thinking on political issues. And obviously they think that you ought to have nonpartisan maps, but not in Democrat states. They think that partisan maps are just fine in Democrat states. They should be everywhere else. You know, places like Texas and Florida, oh, yeah, those maps should be nonpartisan. But in our states, you know, we have no problem drawing a partisan map.
Right. Yeah, where's the nonpartisan commission to draw the map in Maryland? Why didn't Democrats push that?
Well, the governor had it for 7 years. He put in the bill to create a nonpartisan commission. The Democrats wouldn't even bring it to a vote.
Exactly.
Because I think they know that that 70% of people in the United States think that you actually should draw lines on a nonpartisan basis.
That's right. So tell just the people of Maryland, that if I were to break down, if I would actually draw fair maps in Maryland, you get, you know, population centers like, you know, the Montgomery counties and the Baltimores. But beyond that, it seems like much of the state is actually occupied by people with kind of conservative sentiments. Like there should probably be a lot more Republican congressmen in that state if the districts were drawn fairly.
That's right. So the governor did create an independent commission. It wasn't sanctioned by the legislature, but he did create an independent commission. And the map he drew was, I think you look at it and you say, yeah, this is a reasonable map. You know, for instance, you know, Baltimore City has one district. It's 600,000 people. It shouldn't have more than one district. In those kind of maps, you have at least two Republicans. And in a good Republican year, you'd have three Republicans, which is fair. I mean, we are a Democrat state, but we have a sizable minority of Republicans. We've had Republican governors. So if you draw this map on a nonpartisan basis in Maryland, you will get 2 to 3 Republicans any which way you draw it on a nonpartisan basis.
All right. So Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland is with us, and he stands at risk of having his district erased at the moment. What's your message to Annapolis today, Congressman, as they take up these maps?
Well, I would just urge caution. I mean, they ought to look to Virginia and New Jersey and say, look, if you want to roll the dice on an 8-0 map, go ahead and roll the dice. But it's going to be a very bad year for Democrats next year. And if you want to weaken some of those Democrat districts in order to attempt to, you know, make an 8-0 map, you know, so be it. But, you know, you should be careful what you wish for.
Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland's Fighting First, fighting to exist. thank you, Congressman. Great to have you with
us.
Thank
you.
Oh, my goodness. What a story that is in Maryland. And meanwhile, as he's sharing this news with us, that he's very hopeful, very optimistic sounding congressman. He thinks he'll have a job potentially after the next election. Meanwhile, Merrick Garland is suing Texas. You see this today? The United States Attorney General has decided that Texas needs to be sued for the way it drew its maps. Merrick Garland going after them. Here he is today. Listen.
Today, the Justice Department has filed suit against the state of Texas for violating Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. As the Supreme Court has observed, a core principle of our democracy is that, quote, voters should choose their representatives, not the other way around.
Again, they're not going to hassle Maryland over any of this.
Close quote. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act requires that state voting laws, including laws that draw electoral maps, provide eligible voters with an equal opportunity to participate in the democratic process and elect representatives of their choosing. The complaint we filed today alleges that Texas has violated Section 2 by creating redistricting plans that deny or abridge the rights of Latino and Black voters to vote on account of their race, color, or membership in a language minority group.
Well, think about this. First of all, why would Republicans do that in Texas? In Texas, what was the biggest movement in the country last year among demographics and support for Republicans? It was Hispanic voters moving towards the right in Texas. So you're telling me that Republicans are trying to water down the quote Latino vote? Take your pick. More on that coming up, by the way. The use of the phrase specifically Latinx. That we've got new polling data on that subject. It's hilarious, just because, you know, again, it goes right to the core of how phony everyone detects Democrat politics to be, including Latinx people. But in Texas, dramatic movement in the direction of the Republican Party among Hispanic voters in particular, and some nominal movement among Black voters towards Republicans, towards Trump in 2020. The huge numbers. And so Republicans are trying to water down those votes? Not at all. Can you imagine? And so Merrick Garland stepping in, suing Texas over the way it drew its map, not to make things more fair, but to fight to advance Democrat Party power interests. That's what they want to do. They don't want Texans having the right to draw their own map. They don't want that. They're going to interfere with this. Meanwhile, you're not going to hear a burp out of Merrick Garland about the way Maryland's drawn right now or it's going to be drawn. Not a single belch, including if they eliminate the district, the first congressional district, where Congressman Andy Harris is the lone Republican right now in the state. Merrick Garland won't bat an eyelash if he's eliminated by the Democrats. Amazing stuff, and it's all playing out right now. But yeah, once again, you know, this legal battle. It's interesting watching the states and the Biden administration in these massive fights legally, and the states. I got to say, the states. If you look at the scoreboard right now, the states are getting win after win after win against the Biden administration, just especially on the vaccine mandates. They're smacking the heck out of them in court over and over and over again. All of these states, Missouri, Texas, go down the list. They're saying, we're not doing the mandates, the healthcare mandates, the government contractor mandates, the OSHA mandates, that is mandates for companies that have over 100 employees. Yeah, we're not playing that game. That's unconstitutional. You're doing it in an illegal way. We're not for it. We're suing you and we're stopping it. And it's in federal court after federal court after federal court, they've had success. So now Texas is saying, okay, you want to fight us? Go ahead. File suit. Let's see how you fare in court this time. We'll see. It's 449. By the way, an update on the CNN Chris Cuomo story. You know that Chris Cuomo is like preparing to napalm his entire former network now, CNN? Like he really wants to burn them down. I told you about that he's expected to file suit now and against the network because he thinks he's owed $6 million a year for the duration of his contract. They want him to pay out. He wants them to pay out the rest of the contract. But what's the point? Like what? CNN, what are they paying for? They used to pay for the Cuomo family's protection in New York. But Governor Cuomo's gone. Whatever happened to that guy? This is like the Clinton Foundation. Remember what happened to the donations with the Clinton Foundation? As soon as Hillary didn't have a real chance, despite whatever claims she was making in public about how she really won the election, as soon as she didn't have a chance at actually pulling the levers of power anymore, the money dried up. Weird. Well, the same thing happened at CNN. The protection racket was gone. The Andrew Cuomo, Governor Andrew Cuomo, was gone. Chris Cuomo had no one to protect him. It's over. And so now he's filing. He wants to file suit, reportedly. Additionally, Chris Cuomo claimed in his statement after he was canned this weekend that CNN boss Jeff Zucker knew everything the whole time and that this investigation stuff is garbage, that Jeff Zucker was intimately familiar with the details of what Chris Cuomo was doing for his brother. He's napalming the bridge. And so what is it left CNN to do? CNN is now attacking Chris Cuomo as a liar. the guy who's occupied the 9 p.m. position on CNN since 2018. Remember CNN, you know, facts first. This is an apple. This isn't an apple. Remember this stuff? We tell the truth. They're now saying that their number one television anchor in terms of ratings just on their network is a liar. He's made a number of accusations that are patently false, the network telling the Wall Street Journal this weekend. This reinforces why he was terminated for violating our standards and our practices, as well as his lack of candor. Mm-hmm. But Cuomo's saying, no, that's not true. Zucker knew everything. He knew it all. He said in his statement, a spokesman telling the Wall Street Journal, quote, they were widely known to be extremely close and in regular contact, including about the details of Mr. Cuomo's support for his brother. Spokesman telling the Wall Street Journal this, the New York Post here with the summary, saying this of Chris Cuomo's shady support for his big brother as the governor's sex scandal unfolded. Quote, there were no secrets about this. There were no secrets about this, said Cuomo's spokesman, as other individuals besides Mr. Cuomo can attest. All right, put all of this together. Cuomo's own spokesman is saying there are no secrets here. CNN knew every detail. And we now get the report that Cuomo is going to be suing CNN over the circumstances of his dismissal because he feels like he's owed $6 million a year for the duration of the contract. Now, if that's the case, imagine what Discovery is going to reveal in a lawsuit like this. Chris Cuomo is going to be able to point to, nope, Zucker knew. Zucker knew. I've got text messages. I've got emails. I've got this contemporaneous evidence. You're gonna have to have Zucker give a deposition. It's all going to be exposed. And so Chris Cuomo dragging down executives at CNN with him in the process. Couldn't happen to a nicer group of people. So this is pretty amazing. Zucker, by the way, the New York Post points out that Zucker has stood by Cuomo during all of this. And for the months, as people were calling for his firing, he stood by him as they were doing the dumb thing on television where Cuomo was like, you know, doing the Abbott and Costello routine with his brother and trying to make him likable in the midst of all the people he was killing in the old folks' homes. Yeah, that was all happening. Zucker was fine with all of it. Meanwhile, CNN was firing unvaccinated employees. Remember that? They fired like three people who showed up to the office who didn't get the vaccine, canned in a heartbeat. Boom, gone. But Chris Cuomo, he got to ride it out because Jeff Zucker protected him. Jeff Zucker protected him. And in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, Jeff Zucker once said of Chris Cuomo, quote, "He's the perfect cable news anchor." It's perfect. That's the word for it. By the way, I'll be chatting about this very subject tonight on Tucker Carlson Tonight with my buddy Tucker. It is a wild roller coaster of a story. It's 4:59.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing to say.
Congratulations.
Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.